This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann. I'm at Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga today, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. It's the middle of the week.
Oh, it is the middle of the week already. That's so good.
I am not making headway into this to-do list, though. Things keep appearing on it.
Well, do you know what? My problem is I've also got a to-do list, but I've got this garden, and every time the rain stops, I go out and get lost in the garden for a little while, and I come back, and the list is still there. So what I'm thinking about using it for is mulch under the bark, my to-do list, because that will be its most useful purpose, I reckon.
I've got a thing on my to-do list. I've got a thing on my to-do list that I don't know what it means. I don't remember putting it on the list. I've no idea what it means.
So I'm just in the most fun way you possibly can.
I'm just leaving it there until that person comes back and nags me for whatever it was I said I'd do. I don't know who it is. And who are we introducing today?
Today is my pleasure. I first of all give you a little bit of back information. So our guest today is 19 years old. He is articulate. He's funny, he's very, very smart, and he's made a commitment to doing something that most 19-year-olds would rather not do, I think, but we need more 19-year-olds doing, and that is he is standing for office. So our guest is Ethan Reel. He is the Labour candidate for the Waitaki seat in the South Island in the upcoming general election. Ethan, thank you and welcome.
Kia ora, thank you so much for having me and for that warm introduction.
So that thing that Mawira said most people wouldn't do, you put your head above the parapet. Let's go with that one first. Yeah. Why, Ethan?
Yeah, and I think it's for that very rich reason you've just detailed, is right now we don't have enough rangatahi stepping into the space of having these tough conversations. When you look at the median age of our parliamentarians, it currently sits at 47. But when you look at really the average age of New Zealanders, it sits within 35. Currently, our youngest members of parliament sit at the age of 28 and 29. But those under the age of 25 represent 33% of New Zealand's population. And so we could be doing a lot more about ensuring that we are getting enough young people stepping into seats and filling these seats and being able to be part of those decision-making conversations, because we are absolutely capable. We're ready to have those conversations. And it's conversations like we're having right now between yourselves and I that will enable us to be doing that. So thank you for the opportunity. And I'm looking forward to delving a bit more about why we're doing this and why we should be encouraging more young people to stand.
If you weren't a young person, so if we take that out of the, if we take that factor that out for a moment, why are you standing?
I'm standing because I truly believe that our community has been underrepresented for the past 18 years. And not to delve too much into that or to dig at anyone, but we have had the same representation for 18 years. And from what I'm hearing in the community is that regardless of age and experience, they don't feel that that's met the needs of the community. So for me, it's about ensuring that we are representing the wider community and that we are delivering a strong, local and present voice. And I don't think age is a factor into that. So taking age aside from it, it's about doing what's best for our people. And they'd like to see their Member of Parliament more often fighting for them and being on the ground. And I absolutely believe that I can do that, and I've been proving that I can be doing that over the past 6 months. Right now, we need representatives that work hard for the people they represent, regardless of their party politics or political beliefs. Every community needs a community politician that's going to champion for them. We don't need more career politicians that are there for their own agenda. And for me, I'm here to do this for my community. And whether it be a short or long term, the people will vote me out or they'll vote me in. And that's completely how it should be.
So tell us about Waitaki.
Yes, it's the second largest general electorate. And I say general electorate because we often forget about our Māori electorates and the awesome work that the Honourable Rino Terakatini is doing for Te Tai Tonga in the largest Māori electorate. So he's our Māori MP. But looking at our general electorate, we're the second largest, with Southland, I believe, being our largest, which is our neighbour electorate. We are a vast rural electorate, rural in terms of land mass, but when you look at our population, we are very much an urban dominated population. We're unique in the sense that we have so many isolated towns and communities across the electorate, and we all face very similar issues, but we have our own niches of those issues. We are currently served by a national member of parliament and have been for the past 18 years, but that doesn't mean to say that the seat can't flip. The best piece of advice that I got when I entered politics was every single seat is winnable. And I think that's what encourages young people to be on the ground and to be fighting for the change that we so desperately need to see. The seat was held by the Honourable Jim Sutton, who was Minister for Agriculture. Then after that, it was held by the Honourable David Parker, who is our current Attorney General for the government. So we know that it can turn red and it could turn any colour. That's the point of politics and true democracy. We need to be electing representatives from all walks of life. But we are a unique electorate, and I'm really proud of our community because we are so diverse. Whether it comes down to representing Oamaru, who has one of the largest Pacifica communities outside of South Auckland, or shadowing over to Wanaka, which is one of our biggest tourist hotspots in the country, we have a really growing population and we need a representative that's going to represent all walks of life. And I think having a young person is what's really exciting about that, is because young people can represent that. We understand the challenges that face in front of us and we know how to just get on and relate with everyday people.
When we think of Waitaki, you're right, we think of it's a rural area, but you're right, it does have the communities. So you've got Oamaru and you've got Wanaka. Are they the two biggest places?
Yeah, so for a long time, Oamaru was the largest community, but now Wanaka is outpacing us. And especially when you look at the Upper Clutha regions, which includes places like Cromwell, Hawea, and Wanaka. But then you've also got communities like Geraldine, Waimate, and Palmerston. So these are all quite niched communities, but they do have growing populations. And so when I say that, whilst we, from a land-based perspective, we do have a rural electorate, we're very much led in an urban populated demographic. So we can't always be shied away from the fact that we are a rural electorate, because it is those communities which enable us to be people-powered and to be represented across the entire electorate.
So in your campaigning, have you been going to the AMP shows or wherever you find the farming folk, as well as to the community halls?
Absolutely. When I was first nominated, my first day of the job, I headed up to the Fairlie McKenzie Country AMP show, and that was a daunting experience. At the time, I was 18. This is the first time, I guess, I'd publicly aligned myself with a political party, perhaps a political party that wasn't favoured in that community. So it was daunting, but we headed into that AMP show with a lot of grit and a lot of confidence, and we were perceived with that confidence. Of course, there was naysayers, there were hecklers, but then there was also people that just quietly walked past and showed their way of supporting us with a thumbs up. But I think that that's the conversation we need to have, is people are shying away from showing their alignment to a political party because they're scared to. That's the conversation we should be having, because in a true democratic society, that shouldn't be the forefront of it all. We should be able to be encouraging everyone to have these political conversations and not be shying away from the fact that we are Labour supporters, we're National supporters, we can support whoever we want, and that is our absolute democratic right. But I think we've got a long way to go into having those conversations. A lot has changed in the past 3 years, and as a young person, that's what's really daunting, and that's what's really shied a lot of young people away from standing up and being part of this political discourse. So I just hope that by standing and by putting my advocacy foot first, we are encouraging that next generation to not shy away and to be aligning themselves whatever way they wish to, and to be proud of that.
Let's take the first of your music tracks. Let's have Joel Corry, Lionheart. Why this one?
As you'll hear in the lyrics, you have to be fearless like a lion heart. And I think right now in the current, election and political climate we're in, regardless of who you are and if you're in the forefront of politics or not, we need to be courageous and we need to be fearless to be able to face some of the challenges that lie so clearly in front of us.
Ethan, you've just, a year ago now, finished school, the COVID generation of school leavers. We were all worried about that, your generation, of being completely sort of broken by that experience, staying at home for a year and then a year on Zoom and whatever else, and then in and out of school. You seem to have come through okay. Do you think your generation's going to be all right?
I think if we allow our generation to be encouraged within society and to be uplifted, then yeah, we will be all right. What I saw through COVID is the shared challenges that we face on the ground, you know, whether it be the endemic of mental health, whether it be the anxiety we face around climate change, or whether it be actually just being able to find ways to identify ourselves within our communities. I don't want to see any other young person being discouraged from being simply who they are. And I think that that's what this election has brought out. There are political leaders which are incredibly privileged to be in their roles who choose to use identity as a way to bait people and as a way to gain political votes, but also political leadership. And to me, that's not okay. So as young people, I think the more that other generations can encourage us just to be confident in who we are, to identify ourselves however we might want to, then we will be all right. But what we saw in COVID is it allowed us just to take a breath and just to take a second or a moment to think about where we're headed, where we want to head, but also who we want to be in our own lives. And I think that was a really beautiful thing for a lot of people. And for myself, that's how I got involved in politics. Something sparked during that first lockdown that made me want to lead some of that change in my community. For other young people and for other people in general, they dealt with a bit of an identity crisis, whether it be through, you know, realizing maybe we're not contributing enough to our community. Maybe we're working a little bit too much, or maybe we should be taking a break every once in a while. Those are all very valid reasons for us to be having those conversations. But I think going forward, if we want to support our young people, we have to enable them to be able to be encouraged to have those conversations. And I think that that's what's really lacking right now. And that's partly one of the reasons why I am standing, is so that we can show our young people, you can absolutely have a conversation in politics. You can absolutely lead the way and lead that change. But at the same time, we're being discouraged by so many political leaders that in their privileged positions, they have every right and every mandate to be creating a lot of change for us. And they're not using that privilege. So with my generation, when we see things aren't getting done, we get it done ourselves. And we've seen that through things like the school strike for climate movement, the Black Lives Matter protests. We will lead the change that we want to see, whether or not our politicians have the courage to do that. And so for me, whilst I'm not the first young person to stand, and I certainly won't be the last, we've got to continue paving that pathway. And whether I pave a couple of stones for that next young person, it's every contribution that matters to be able to create meaningful change.
You would, though, be the youngest MP by... on record, I think, by a couple of years. Was that a challenge to be taken seriously when you put your name forward? Or was it did you manage to turn it around and use it to your advantage? Or how did that play out?
Yeah, at the start, there was a lot of naysayers, and there still are every day. You don't take that personally. I think when you enter a role of being a political candidate, you can't take it personally. You have to sort of separate yourself and that role whilst keeping your values and your humanity, but also realize people are criticizing the role, not you as a person. But what I will say is I don't think any politician should ever be complacent about how much experience they bring to the role. And that's one of the arguments that I face every day, is the fact that young people don't have so-called life experience. But we should really be questioning as to how we identify life experience, because if it comes down to how many jobs you've had, young people are working from the age of 12 or 13 nowadays. If it comes down to, how many years you've been on this planet. Again, we've got representatives and political leaders that have been on this planet for, some of them double my age, almost triple my age. But that doesn't mean to say that they've got more experience and more credibility than I do to be able to represent my community. I like to think that I've proven that I can represent my community like every other young person can do. Sure, we can have that conversation about age, and I welcome that because I allow myself to be in this position and to be vulnerable to that. But I don't allow other young people to be criticized and discouraged for wanting to have a voice in their community. That's where I draw the line. We need to be encouraging our young people to be part of these conversations. Whether or not they want to be filling a seat in their community doesn't matter. we should be looking at what they can bring to the table, because everyone brings a slice to the pie. They all deserve to have a say in how we create that meaningful change for that next generation, for our communities, for everyone in our communities. And they shouldn't be disregarded just because they're young. They should be regarded because of their confidence and their willingness to have a say and to challenge the status quo.
And since I've been on the earth, I've forgotten what the exact numbers are, but the carbon emissions have increased by about 100% and the parts per million have gone up by a scary amount. Well, I should know that number. I should be able to quote that. So we're not doing too well. Does that threat, you mentioned the school strike for climate. Does the climate biodiversity, does that sort of stuff keep you up at night, or are you managing to frame it positively?
What keeps me up at night is that there are political candidates and people that engage with our political systems that continue to deny and fob off the challenges that lie so clearly in front of us. And that's what frustrates me, is that we are in a really pivotal moment where we could be creating a lot of change and a lot of meaningful change for all of us here in Aotearoa. But we're still so stuck in the mindset of having to accept or deny the harsh realities that our country and our world is facing. Climate change is real, and it feels ridiculous in 2023 that I have to continue saying that. And perhaps that may be because of the communities I represent, but I'm committed to ensuring that we continue to challenge that mindset, because we have to bring everyone along in this journey with us. We cannot leave everyone behind. So part of that is, again, making sure that we're giving the platform to all generations, but particularly our younger ones, because they are the ones that will be facing the brunt of these challenges for the longest amount of time compared to any other generation. So I want us to be able to continue having those conversations. But yeah, it does keep me up, and I want to ensure that politicians are held accountable. And I don't think that it's acceptable in 2023 that some of them refuse to admit that we have a climate emergency right in front of us, that we have the fundamentals to be responding to that. It comes down to political willpower and political courage, which a lot of our politicians do not have. And honestly, it comes down to electing the right people. So to the people listening, if you want to see change, if you want to see true, meaningful climate action that we are so desperately needing, but we so desperately are able to curate, then we must be electing the right people. So often I hear the constant argument that New Zealand is one of the lowest emitters in the world. Why should we be the ones creating that change? Well, I say if every country took that minority approach, then we would get nowhere in the world to battling the climate crisis. New Zealand has proven that we can be world leading, and that comes down to the fact that we have empathy here in New Zealand. We have courage, but we've also got naturally born leaders. We can use that and capitalize on that to show the world that we can lead in climate change. And we're already doing that. Since the past 3 years, we've seen a consecutive decline in New Zealand's greenhouse gas emissions, and they've fallen to their lowest levels in 8 years. That doesn't mean to say or mean to invalidate the work that needs to be done. We can go further. We must continue to go further. The work has only just started. But that shows that we can lead the change for the rest of the world, and we're already showing that. We just need to continue to go forward, improve, and encourage our political leaders to continue that work for us as well.
That were two small arguments, really annoying, isn't it? Because it would be like saying we only emit whatever percentage it is, we shouldn't have to do anything. But it would be like excusing London or like excusing the airline industry. It just doesn't make sense.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orakanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tahu hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars and your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, and we find ourselves constantly in need of recalibration and reorientation as we find ourselves back in a much more recognisable consensus reality. And it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the love, the care, the compassion, the understanding that we all need and that we can innately provide and innately deserve. I speak to you now from a very mild evening. The windows are open and the sky is clear. As we head now into October almost, we are finding ourselves really in a beautiful time of blossoming, blooming, fragrant, nectar-filled air, sweetness, new life, kuanga, spring. It's a beautiful time. And I hope that for you, you are really enjoying this time of refreshment and rejuvenation, this time of remembering our own vitality, our own strength, our own ability to transform at any time, the way we perceive, the way that we move in the world, the way that we appreciate one another and ourselves. This is a time of release and renewal. I know for myself, I'm so grateful to work in the living world, and I'm so grateful to appreciate and admire all those life forms that surround me, standing strong in their own power without having to overtly exert in any way, just beautifully being there, just beautifully manifesting, just being there. And I hope that for you, you have the opportunity to do this, just to rest in your own being, just to rest in your own presence, in your own perfection, as you are, with no constraints, with no calls upon your time, with no calls upon your attention, just allowing yourself to fully relax, fully rest in who you are, in your perfection. And I know that for us all at this time, we are, of course, heading towards another time of change. And it's so important that we, at this time, gather to our hearts those things which give us comfort, that we gather to our minds those things which give us hope, that we gather to our spirits those things that recognize that we are part of an infinite and ongoing journey, that we are part of a much bigger picture. And so whatever changes should surround us, whatever difficulties and whatever new ways of being, doing, seeing, feeling should have to come into play, we will survive and we are strong in who we are. And it's this essential being, of course, it's this inner sanctuary, it's this inner peace, this inner place of quietude, which is our constant companion. And we are fortunate to be able to access it when we need to. And of course, for me, being part of this show is a huge help and a huge balm to my soul. And to thank Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me, I'm so grateful. I know that as I move about in the world, being able to conceptualize things in this way is so helpful. And I hope for you that you're finding ways to conceptualize each movement on your journey in a way which honors and serves your soul. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
Thank you, Tahu. You are listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Ethan Real.
Ethan, in your first song, you talked about being courageous and fearless. Where did that come from in you? What has made you this courageous, fearless person?
I think it comes down to the age, to be honest, and being young. Growing up, I was quite a shy child, but I always came with an advocacy foot first. So for me, it was about finding ways that we could be actually protecting our most vulnerable in a lot of those conversations. And that comes with my willingness to be involved in politics. But the current argument and the quote I always tell myself is, if not us, then who? And if not now, then when? We have to be courageous in a lot of these conversations and challenges that lie so clearly in front of us. And what I'm seeing is there are a lot of young people that are being discouraged and wanting to be part of these conversations. And I acknowledge that, but someone has to lead that way and lead that charge. And I'm willing to be that person, as are many other young people. And I acknowledge all the work many have done before me and will continue to do after me. But we have to be courageous if we want to see the change that is so desperately needed. I come into this role acknowledging that whilst I may stand in a room where 50% of the room disregard or disagree with what I say, but those people in the room don't represent the wider population. what I say is what I believe in and what a vast majority of our community believes in, and is that to have a strong local and present advocate for our community, but also to ensure that we are willing to have the political courage to fight for that change that I bring up a lot of the time. And I know I've got a lot of members in the community backing me and across the country, and I hope we can continue to have those conversations.
Do you think that there is a thing that we can introduce into education that will enable the kind of kōrero that you're having today in more young people? What's missing that can give that agency to our young to stand up like you are?
Absolutely. And again, that comes down to a political choice, is to have civics education in our kura and our schools across Aotearoa. A lot of the conversation you would have seen lately has been around if we should be lowering the voting age to 16, something that I've advocated for. But it comes down to, we need to ensure that our young people have the resources they need to make an informed decision. There is so much rhetoric and bias and misinformation across Aotearoa right now. And we need to be acknowledging and holding that to account. But ultimately, we need unbiased education in our curriculum, and that comes down to having civics. I think that's a really powerful tool and something we should have unlocked years ago for our rangatahi to be able to have these conversations. But in saying that, we're already prepared to have those conversations. A lot of the challenges we face, whether it comes back to climate change, mental health, or even things like the cost of living, those issues are facing young people so much harder than they have been for any other generation. And those issues will be challenging our youngest generation for a vastly longer time compared to others. So our young people have almost been forced into this political discourse because we have no other choice, because we see a lot of political leaders that don't acknowledge us and don't encourage us to be seeing any of that change. If someone's going to get it done, then we believe we can get it done, and we will put ourselves forward to see meaningful and constructive change. And so I think that that's why we should be encouraging more young people.
You were talking before about climate change, and I was at a candidate debate on just the other night, actually, where one of the minor parties' candidates stood up and was giving us a lecture about natural versus anthropogenic climate change. And from his perspective, it's all nature's fault and not our fault at all, and it's a waste of money to try and convince people otherwise from his perspective. What would you say to him?
I'd tell him to go read up a little bit more about the science-based evidence. But look, ultimately, again, there is just so much negative rhetoric and political discourse that goes completely against what we should be seeing in our political leaders. And for me, you know, sure, we can have that conversation around, sure, climate change is a natural process, but it is the human change that we need to see as well as part of that. So we have become a society that is so prone to consumerism and to constantly want more. We need to be able to have the conversation is about how we can face true equity in our country and how we can share the natural resources that Aotearoa is so rich in. But again, if we want to have a conversation around that, we need to have the right political leaders to be leading that way. I don't want to see any politician denying climate change any further. We don't have the time to be having a conversation around what's real and what's false. We need to have positive, constructive, future thinking conversations. But that comes down to electing the right people. And I'm so sick and tired of having to find and navigate my way as a young person through that political discourse, because it's tiring and it's exhausting that we have to continue to show up other generations about the challenges that are so clearly in front of us. What we need is someone that's really going to advocate for us. And it comes down to ensuring that we have an intergenerational response. I don't think that the shared challenge of climate change should lie on one generation's shoulders. This is about all of us. We're all tangata in our country, and we should be having a shared response to that. But I'm so disheartened and disappointed that we still have political candidates that just have given up and don't have the motivation or energy anymore. Perhaps that's why we should be electing younger people, to bring a bit of breath of fresh air and energy to those conversations.
Oh, you are speaking to the choir there. We're talking to us, that is for sure. It's really interesting listening to those guys who still have that complete misunderstanding of the science. And in this case, the candidate was saying how 1,500 scientists around the world have said there's no such thing as human-made climate change. And I said to him, but how many have said that there is? And he couldn't answer that, of course, because it didn't suit his agenda. So when you get into the parliament, and oh my gosh, I so hope you do. I really do. I wish that I could magic you in there right now. I would if I could. But when you get in there, whether it's this time or next time, how are you going to deal with those guys who and I think one of the big concern is that people will take a position that guarantees them being elected again next time, because it's about them and their aspirations rather than what's best for the community. How are you going to deal with that, Ethan?
Yeah, it's a good question. One of the things that one of my mentors taught me, who many of us all know, is former Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, is disagreements is fundamentally a good thing. And when she told this to me, it took me a while to grasp what she was saying. And that is, if we can create a safe and structured environment to disagree with one another, we can find that common ground. But again, we're talking about a lot of political leaders that won't want to find that common ground with the everyday New Zealanders. They're being backed by a loud minority, which is overshining the collective majority that we have in Aotearoa. So what I say is to the people listening in is find a way to battle against that misinformation and that rhetoric that is creating a division within our country. Those very rich people will say that the major parties and the people who are speaking up for all of us are creating the division. But no, it is them. It is the rhetoric that comes from them that's creating the division. We all want an Aotearoa that recognises the inequities in our country. We all want an Aotearoa that recognises that we can be world leading when it comes to climate change, and that we can be battling it out when it comes to those challenges. What we don't need is the same political leaders that are standing up and discouraging all the work that we've already done and that we will continue to do. And so if I get into Parliament, I will continue to hold those people to account, because they should absolutely be held to account, as should every politician. But I think we've allowed a space and a platform for them to share this nasty and gross disinformation that is really shutting down a lot of people in our communities. So as people in our communities, we need to be joining that collective majority, which we saw in the 2020 election. During COVID, we managed to all unite together as a country. I want to see that unity come back again, because I do believe it absolutely still lies there. And we've seen that through so many different shared moments in our country's history. We need to be confident to have these conversations. People are being discouraged, but we don't have to be. We just need to stand up and fight for what we believe is right, as other people and other political leaders feel like they're doing. And I acknowledge that, and I sympathise with that. You know, we've come through a time where COVID has divided us in a sense, and there are a lot of loud people that think that they're also protecting their own people. So I think in time we will find a way to have a positive, constructive conversation around that. Perhaps not right now, whilst we're in the heat of an election. Our thoughts and opinions can become a little bit fogged. But I think that right now we need to continue electing the very rich people that will have our back and that will continue to stand and fight for us.
There was another interesting observation that I made at this last candidates debate. I actually had decided I wasn't going to any candidates debates this year, because I just got sick of all the violent language, the horrendous behaviour, which I find is shameful and embarrassing. It's not who we are as a collective people, but it seems to be who we are becoming, and I don't like that. But however, what I observed was that while people stood on a platform shouting down everybody else and not allowing anyone else's voice, they were screaming, "It's democracy," but it was only democracy when they agreed with it. And I found that really difficult. Has that been your observation as well, that like the whole concept of democracy seems to be being completely misunderstood or misused anyway?
Democracy doesn't look like shouting down another person's opinion. It doesn't look like threatening people before a meet the candidate or a debate. It doesn't look like scaremongering a group of people through a loud minority. Democracy allows us all to be part of that conversation. And I've seen that through this campaign, through different meet the candidates and debates. But what I've also seen is a group of challenging, but sometimes violent individuals that choose to come in with their own rhetoric and choose to shine down on other people for having a differing opinion to them. That's not true democracy. And so I say to those people, have the courage to know when it's time to stop. Have the courage to actually be willing to have an honest conversation, and have the courage to actually be willing to listen as well as we are listening to you. Right now, we're in a really challenging time in our community where we are allowing this loud minority to overshine our collective majority. So I think we need to take some time as a country to really identify that and create some more safe spaces for us to have a conversation. It's challenging and it's a really scary time for a lot of people and for young people. And that's why we're not seeing many people engage in our political systems. That's not right for me, and I don't want to see that any further. But I think we're going to need to have a serious think about how we're going to change that and how in future we can prevent that from happening again.
Let's squeeze in the second of your music choices. Let's have the Growlers, Going Gets Tough, not Billy Ocean. Different version of Going Gets Tough. Why this one?
This is actually my campaign song. I found it halfway through the campaign where I was having a pretty rough time mentally. I guess you see a lot of the negative political discourse and you wonder how we're going to reach the end of it all. But I listened to the song and it made me realise that the love and the peace and the empathy that we all show each other will get us through to the end. And I think that that's what we need to remember, is that we're all human and we all have the ability and right to have love.
Off work in the morning and up at the crack of dawn. All my money worries, wherever I go, come along. Worries a bully that just won't let me be. Trying to keep me busy, tussling and struggling. No home since the fire, me and the ash can't settle down. Unsure of where I'm bound, so I sink another round. Placebo for pain, and there's no one for to blame. I refuse to accept that my work is all in vain. Worry's a bully that just won't let me be. Trying to keep me busy, tussling and struggling. Soon as
Ethan, there has been a lot of politicising of the notion of co-governance, which is a bit silly because it's been around forever and it's such a beautiful thing. What's your position?
I think we've really got lost in the translation of co-governance, and I think there are a lot of political parties that have put the forefront of co-government to their political cases. Co-governance is very separate from co-government. What we're seeing in co-governance is that it's the shared management of assets and things like our waterways and our water infrastructure between both treaty partners to which we signed up with nearly 150 years ago. Again, what I say to people is co-governance is nothing to be afraid of. It's not new and it's not something that we should challenge. Co-governance has been entrenched in Aotearoa's democratic systems for over a decade. That was introduced by the last national government, and so we should be willing to see that go further. For people that are frightened or a little bit angst about it, what I always boil it down to is that we all want good water quality. We all want safe drinking water. We all want affordable water. And to be honest, what's good for Māori is good for all New Zealanders. That is the best way that we can lead forward. So let's not be angst or scared about it. Let's just have a serious conversation about what that means and stop getting lost in the disinformation that circulates us.
And kind of on that subject of disinformation, there is quite a strong movement against our young people having their voice in Parliament. I think it's fear-based. I think that a lot of our older people know that if our young people are given the vote, it will bring out the truth of what's really happening, which is that our young people are terrified of, especially, you know, some of the policies that are coming out of the Blue Team. But and that they will influence the outcome of votes, and I think that's really sad. Where do you sit there?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think some political parties might just be afraid that we will continue to see a left-leaning political system in Aotearoa, because ultimately our young people identify things like climate change, and we know that traditionally left-wing parties are the only ones that will address that challenge and actually deliver for that. And we've seen that after 6 years of a Labour Greens government. But going further, you know, if we want to have a conversation about lowering the voting age, let young people lead that conversation. That can't be dictated to by young people. That is a democratic right to be part of that conversation. 16-year-olds, you know, they can get their driver's license, they can consent, they can leave school, they can leave home, they can even own a firearms license. Those are all very valid reasons to also have a say in our democratic systems. But they also pay income tax. I remember I had my first job at the age of 14 and I started paying income tax. And we know from Inland Revenue in the year 2022 alone, 16 and 17-year-olds paid $92 million of income tax. They should absolutely deserve to have a say on where that money's best spent. But again, if we want to have those conversations, let's encourage all members of our community to be part of that conversation.
I have some questions to end the show, and almost negative time, so we're going to have to really wriggle. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Oh my gosh, that is a really good question. Look, to be honest, I think it's being able to prove that young people can run for Parliament and they can absolutely be part of these political conversations.
What's your superpower?
Being able to read a room. And I know that sounds quite trivial, but I think we tend to miss out on that. And the fact that just by walking into a room and acknowledging the people in that room and what they may be feeling could absolutely change everything. And so I think we need to do more of that. Identifying and having a little bit more emotional intelligence in our personalities can go a long way.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Yeah, I consider I'm still in my activist era. And I think that's a damn good thing for us.
You think it's an era? Do you think it's going to wear off?
Oh, I think it'll be time to pass the baton down to the next generation eventually. I think you go through a stage, especially as a young person, where you become so emotionally engrossed into a lot of the conversations and the challenges that lie in front of us, that the only way is to take to the streets with the sign and to demand action. But With time, we'll let the next generation below me have that chance to shine.
We'll let you off when you're 85. So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
The sheer challenges we face, and that we need true political courage to address those challenges. I don't want us to see us going backwards when it comes to climate action. I want us to continue going further and be a little bit more radical in some of our policy, because actually people that criticise us of being radical nowadays has led to some really great end results for us as a country and as a community. So let's keep going further, but we need the political leaders to lead that.
The answer to this might be obvious, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So what is the biggest challenge you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Actually, I'm going to go a little bit off course. I'm going to say encouraging, more young people to be part of these conversations so that we can address things like climate change, the cost of living, mental health. Those are all very valid reasons for us to have a say.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Whether you're young or you're older, we need an intergenerational response to the challenges that lie in front of us. And I've talked a lot today about these challenges, and it might seem a bit grim, but I think we've come a really long way over the past 6 years. And I know there's a lot of negativity that circulates a lot of our political discourse at the moment. But let's just boil it down and realise that all we want to see is a thriving Aotearoa for everyone. And we all have our ways of getting about that. So if any of these challenges or issues that I've brought up inspires you or relates to you, then make sure you have your say. Make sure you enroll to vote and you head to the voting booth as of next week. Every single vote counts. Don't ever let anyone dictate to you whether your voice matters, because it absolutely does, regardless of who you choose to vote for. Democracy is a fragile aspect in so many countries, but we're so privileged to have it really thriving in Aotearoa, but we can't be complacent around that. We need to be protecting that, and that comes down to your vote.
Thank you for that. Mawira.
Ethan, I have a 13-year-old son who is absolutely committed to his own activism practice already, and he needs people like you to be amazing role models for him as he grows up and finds more ways to spread his message around waste management. I have really, really enjoyed this interview. I think that I would be so proud to see you in our parliament. I think we would be a better, richer country for it. Thank you very much for the commitment that you've made and for joining us today, and all the best for the day. Kia ora.
Kia ora, thank you so much for having me and leading these conversations for us. I really appreciate it.
Kia ora.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rope. And may you stay. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the lights around you. May you always be courageous, stand upright and be strong, and may you stay.
May your hands always be busy. May your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of change shift. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. And may you stay.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is Bob Dylan's Forever Young. I'm Samuel Mann in Otipoti, Dunedin, with Muira Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined from Oamaru by Ethan Reel. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mā te wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin, with support from New Zealand On the Air.